If you haven't heard, Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
Yeah, boy, was that something to behold.
And it sounds a little different.
Maximum!
That is a brutal ball.
Settle in, get yourself a brandy.
Triple M rocking Test Cricket.
Stock is in again. And he's bowled him! That's the wicket!
What are you doing here with that hammer?
Boom shagalaga.
Yeah, I know.
Live from the SCG, it's day three of the third test between Australia and Pakistan.
Triple M
rocks Test Cricket.
It is day three, the pink day at the pink test, and we can't wait to celebrate everything that that represents as they raise magnificent awareness and money for breast cancer, of course, under the name of the beautiful Jane McGrath. 2 for 126, Pakistan, as they resume day three. They did a nice job of resurrecting their first innings after losing a couple of wickets early yesterday. As I say hello to two, it's fair to say, New South Wales legends in Brad Haddin and Kerry O'Keefe. Welcome, boys.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning to you. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Hads. Welcome back, mate.
Morning, Kerry. It's great to be with you again.
This is the second day in a row, Hads.
Yeah.
You must have to have a lie down at some stage.
I've got to be rotated at lunch, so I'll be out for the next 6 months.
The poxy rain can bugger off, let's be brutally honest. Nothing annoys me more in cricket skull than rain anyway, let alone when it tries to stuff up a beautiful day like today.
And this is a day that Sydney want to turn up for. It's legendary status, yep, in this city, the McGrath, third day of the test match. They want to come, and I implore you, please come down. There's going to be a lot of play today. These are passing showers. That's the forecast. Australia trying to sweep Pakistan. Big chance today on a wearing pitch. Come down and watch it live and contribute to Jane McGrath Foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. Our hotel, Hads, is in the centre of town, Market Street. We're getting in the car to come today, and I'm staggered at how many people within the city centre have all got the pink on, so they're obviously making their way down. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's an exciting day in the cricket calendar. It's just gone from strength to strength. And on two levels, it's a great cause with Jane and Glenn McGrath, raising awareness for breast cancer. But it's also day three of the test matches, which is a moving day.
Yep.
And today I'll set up where the result of this game is going to go. So I encourage everyone to get out here and enjoy this great day of cricket.
Speaking of, we're a rock station, of course, Skull, you know that.
And yeah.
The Psychedelic Furs, a magnificent song, Pretty in Pink back in the day. I'm describing Brett Lee when I say that. I look at him down there. Look at, he's just a pretty man, B.
Oh.
And he's got Narrowly Meadows with him. And Nez, I'm much more keen to speak to you about the conditions given the rain.
Yeah, the rain has been tumbling down all morning, but it has eased and it's completely stopped now. They will do a pitch inspection at around 10:30 this morning. So hopefully the rain stays away from that point and we can get play underway not too far away. Brett Lee, what will it mean for the bowlers in the Aussie attack?
Well, firstly, the pitch is bone dry, which you would expect, obviously, being under covers all night. The issue is the approach to the crease. Now, the fast bowlers will get a fair bit of, soot, a bit of mud, a bit of, wetness as they land on that front foot. And over a period of time, it will become a little bit slippery. I don't see it being an issue. This is a great draining ground. So I think if they could start on time, there'll be no issues. There'll be a lot of sawdust out. So the bowlers have to be a little bit careful, but there shouldn't be any problems.
And what about the cloud cover?
Well, once again, you don't know what to think of Sydney weather. They've said that there might be a shower or two. I think it's going to be fine. There's a little bit of wind around now. It was quite still about an hour ago here at the SCG, but the wind's come up, which is great. It's going to blow all the cloud away, and what is going to be a fantastic day here at the SCG.
And it is a fantastic day because it's Jane McGrath Day. You're wearing the pink jacket. I've got the pink dress on, and we look around the stands, and there's barely a person not in pink. You were a part of it, and you knew Jane. It's a special day for the players.
Yeah, look, it's firstly, it's great to be a part of. Whether you're a player, a commentator, or in the crowd as part of the public, it's just a great day. Jane was a terrific woman. She has left a massive legacy, a beautiful legacy, obviously with her and Glenn. And, it's just a matter of awareness. And what Glenn was saying, this morning is on television saying about this is a day that we should all embrace, not only for what Jane's left, but all families. It's a fun day out. Make it exciting. Guys dress up wearing their pink. Girls are wearing and looking beautiful in their pink dresses and stuff. So it's a great, great, great day out.
And JB, it's wonderful because the police here in New South Wales at the SCG are donating their entire work day's pay to the Jane McGrath Day and the McGrath Foundation. They're also wearing, much like the baggy green pink hats, they're also wearing pink police hats. So it's wonderful to see. But do spare a thought for former test opener Chris Rogers. He is colourblind, so he's donning the orange today. I think he got a bit confused.
Yep.
Hey, well done, you two. So we know that 10:30 is an inspection time for the umpire's skull, so we're not going to start on time.
No, but that's not a problem. There's plenty of time left in the game for a result to come. Pressure on the Australian spinners today. There should be some signs of wear. There's a bit of scarring on a length up the Paddington end. Nathan Lyon will be trying to plough into that. Stephen O'Keefe didn't get much off the straight yesterday. Has to do more today. And, of course, it'll be reverse swing for Mitchell Starc against a couple of their players who don't quite fancy facing M. Starc. So, big bowling day for Australia. Cloud cover will help the seamers. Dry pitch will help the slow bowlers.
Azhar Ali Hadz has had a very good series. He's on 58 and playing very nicely. And Yunus Khan, the legend from Pakistan, has also got himself to 64 and looked better.
Yeah, it is. And Azhar Ali's maintained his fine touch throughout the series. And he's just been looking for someone to stick in there and support him. And he looks like he's got a supporter there today. So, yeah, it's going to build for a good day. And see if the batsman can show some fight against his good Australian attack.
All right, let's get to a break. Sorry, Scott.
Oh, no, just saying, on Hadz's point, outstanding players at the Chris. Yunus Khan, we know his stats. He's gone past 50 in Test cricket 65 times. He's gone on to 133 times. Do the maths, not the way Chu did it in Brisbane, and he converts 3% of his 50s into 100s. It's a little bit better than that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll get to a break. We've got HG Nelson and his thoughts on day two coming up. We'll hear more from the guys down on the ground about the condition of the SCG as we get ready for day three. But as we go to the break, Julian Schiller takes a unique look at proceedings on day two.
On day two, Hawkey sculled a schooner, proving Aussie PMs love beer almost as much as Pakistani PMs loved militaristic uniforms and slightly elastic versions of democracy. Matt Renshaw proved he was more determined than a blind seagull with a carb allergy to chip shop. A number four batsman was in for so long I was practically hands comatose, and Starc was swinging more wildly than Clive Palmer on a trapeze. The Aussies set Pakistan a first innings total of 538. And Shargeel Khan opened, a man who loves biscuits. So in biscuit terms, Shargeel looked mint, sliced at the first slip and was completely arrow-rooted. At 2 for 16, Pakistan looked to have taken it in the Jats' crackers. But Yunus Khan and Azhar Ali racked up some great wagon wheels, sailing the day. Now the balance is wafer thin, so pull down your Venetians. We'll be back in a TikTok with a bunch of hobnobs.
Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
This is David Warner.
Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
And Triple M rocks Test Cricket.
Day two, as they run and run, of course, day three right now. 2 for 126, Pakistan. They've got Yunus Khan on 64, Azhar Ali on 58. It's pink day at the SCG, and we can't wait for everything that brings. It's a superb thing. Lots of money raised, lots of awareness for a great cause. Brad Haddon and Kerry O'Keefe both here with us, as is HG Nelson, and a man who's made the SCG his own over many, many years. Hello to you, HG. Oh, we better get you just in the proper seat.
Yes, that's a bit better. Yes, good morning, JB. Look, I've walked the SCG. I believe it's drier today now than it was on day one. I don't know why we've got any hold-up or suggestion of hold-up. Mm. For people who are interested in where the 20-cent coins are, go to the Tarps R Us website and have a look at my pitch map there. You'll be able to see that I put 320 cents down at the what I'm described as the Verona cinema end of the of the park here. And I spoke to Nathan and Sock before I did it, and I think we've got them exactly right. Yesterday they weren't quite right in the right positions. But having said that, can I say how great the Super Sopper is? It's an Australian invention. People forget that. Right. We've used it at the SCG for the best part of a quarter of a century now, or a quarter and a half of a century, if I can put it that way. It's just magnificent. It's hardly been needed here today. And then we come to this issue that I raised on the first day, which, why don't we have a roof here? You know, you go to camping grounds around Australia at this time of year, and you see literally hectares of ground covered with tarpaulins. Don't tell me that Aussie Initiative couldn't have roofed this joint overnight and prevented this farce. That's what I'm describing it as, a farce that's going on at the moment here.
HG, I could not agree with you anymore. This is what really annoys me, being half serious for a second.
You don't have to be half serious.
How is it that we're not starting on time? I mean, there just has not been enough rain for this game not to start at the scheduled 10:30.
Well, Mike Baird could sell the SCG to overnight overseas interests and then build a roof.
Yep. Exactly. That's my point exactly, Scott. I said it on the first day. The valuable airspace up here, roof it and stack 420 stories on top. It'd be a magnificent venue. It would solve so many problems for this city. Transport, People could live in their flats and go to the cricket in the lift. We've got no problem with delay of play. People in Pakistan must be scratching their heads, wondering what's going on with, you know, play not starting for, what do we think, half an hour?
Yeah, well, they're inspecting at 10:30, so who knows after that. Hey, you're looking very pink, HG, and showing your colours.
Yes.
Hedges happy?
He's extremely happy. This is an old shirt that I've had for some time. It doesn't get much of a wearing except one day a year. Pink is not my colour, I've got to say that. I didn't get any admiring glances in the bus as I came in. In fact, the bus driver showed me the door.
Is that one of yours, Hads? Have you dusted that off for the great man?
Well, it could be mine because it looks brand new and I haven't used it much this year. So,
And two of the sleeve sponsors are in liquidation. So, it's a little old.
Oh, I love it. All right, 10:30, we've got an inspection. So we're going to know then exactly a start of play time. The Aussies are out there warming up. No sign of Pakistan at the moment, but I'm sure they'll be out there doing likewise at some stage. The boys have got the Sharon out there, Skull. And Dean Hill's down there, of course, a Taswegian, so he's very comfortable with the pill in hand. But I have noticed over the journey of these three games, and Hads probably steered this at you, that there are some northern states operators that look very uncomfortable with it in hand. Trying to kick the rugby union sort of drop kicks and not even sort of even half getting them right. But Dean Hills has got nice style.
Dean Hills has got a beautiful style. Dean Hills does a great job as the analyst for Australian cricket, but this is where he really comes to the front. He loves his 15 minutes where he gets away from the computer. He looks for someone to have a kick with. He gets away in everyone's way in warm-up because he wants to... just get out and have a run around. But back to your point before about there's a lot of finger pointing out there, a lot of debate, but the wicket looks ready to grow, the outfield's dry. I don't understand what we're inspecting here at 10:30. Play the game.
Well, have your inspection at 10 and work out the 10:30's right to go. It constantly baffles me how we don't get this right, especially in Test cricket. You know, people pay their money, bowl the ball at 10:30 and get the thing started.
G'day, it's Matty Wade.
Triple M rocks Test cricket.
Triple M. Rockin' Test Cricket.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Matty Wade, of course, just one of the players that are all listening to Triple M Cricket. They've found the FM dial, HG Nelson, and they're very happy to stay there.
Oh, they're extremely happy. I don't think they'll be going back to AM in a hurry because AM, well, there's no magic. There's no presence. There's no, you know, grunt and poke, as I call it, from a radio dial. Because let's face it, grunt and poke is the most important thing in radio. This is what's forgotten so often. Kids today, they come and say, how do I get involved in radio? I say, have you got any grunt and poke? They look at me as though I'm an idiot.
Whereas you and Roy invented it.
Well, that's very kind, JB. I don't think that's quite right. But look, it's a tremendous atmosphere here today at the SCG. It's even more impressive, I would feel, if these pictures could be shown to other parts of the world about, well, I don't know how stupid humanity can be.
Talking rain is what we're doing because it's not going to start on time. 10:30 is the next inspection. Off to the left, the old Fox Studios clock tower there, Hads. That doesn't look good to me.
No, it doesn't. Looks like we've got a little bit coming, but it hasn't rained for the last 45 minutes, so I see no reason why we can't start play on time. What I was impressed with yesterday was the Pakistan had an improved bowling performance. They got their lengths right, but once again, poor fielding let them down. So, yeah, but Australia were a bit in the same boat as well yesterday. They were a bit below par in the field. With a couple of runouts and a catch gone down from Warner.
They wouldn't be happy with that. Brett Lee, Nerilee Meadows down on the ground. What's the latest?
There'll be an inspection at around 10:30 and decisions will be made from there. The good news is there has been a fair bit of movement down at the station. They've got the tractor in that's removed the covers. So they are getting prepared as much as they can in the hope that they can start play quite soon after that inspection. I've spoken to curator Tom Parker here, who's pretty good with the weather. I think he's more positive thinking than anything, but he says that he's hopeful the next lot of rain will miss us. Brett Lee, you've had a good look. So what can you tell us about how this will affect the way that the day's play will unfold?
Well, I'm standing at the top of the bowlers' run-ups where the sponsor's logo is, and it looks fine to me. I'm with HG. Get on with the game. Look, it's not going to change in the next half an hour. There is a bit of a breeze around, but the run-ups look great. They look fine. There is a little bit of moisture, but that will go as the day goes on. The only issue could be is if the ball gets wet. Now, that's obviously something that the Australian cricketers don't want to bowl with is a wet ball. It takes out the normal swing, the conventional swing, and reverse swing later on. So that will be the only issue. I can't see any ropes going around the ground at the moment, so it tells me that there's no surface water on top. So I think get on with the game. You will see a lot of sawdust at the top of the sign here. But look, the ramps are good. Pitch is bone dry. I'm excited about the day. Let's get on with it.
Let's have a chat about the way that our Aussie bowlers performed yesterday as Stephen O'Keefe just walks up to the pitch to have a bit of a look. The spinners, Nathan Lyon and Stephen O'Keefe, they're under a bit of pressure because they were backed in to play in this SCG test.
Yeah, they are. And look, it's been such a flat wicket. It hasn't really bounced through the way that we know that the SCG wicket can bounce. And it also hasn't spun the way I think they, well, the selection committee may have thought it may have spun a lot more than what it has. We only, you know, are in day three. Day four and five is where the spinners will come into play. I have seen a bit of roughness around the 3 metre mark where Nathan Lyon will be targeting and Stephen O'Keefe. So I think they will come into play as the game goes on. But we hope for their sake that the sun does come out. If it keeps, I guess, overcast the whole day, Nez, then the pitch won't have the chance to scuff up, which might not help the spinners.
So when we see Stephen O'Keefe up there at the moment just having a look, what's he looking for at the moment and what's going through his mind?
He's just looking for a place where he can land the ball. A bit what HG was saying about the 20-cent piece on a good length, but he's looking for a bit of roughness, maybe a bit of a crack starting to open up, but he wants to make sure that he puts the ball in the best area and can get a bit of purchase off the wicket. So we hope for his sake that we can see a bit of scuffness. The clouds are starting to lift. There is a bit of a sprinkle around, but that will go. I can just see at the moment, you know, the clouds are sort of opening up a little bit, so we should be on very, very shortly.
And even Sock is having a chat to the curator at the moment, pretty keen to know what's going on. Josh Hazlewood, he was a remarkable yet again yesterday. He just keeps on delivering.
You know what? It's his line, but also his length. And he's just totally shown the Pakistan bowlers the way to bowl. You know, with that brand new ball, you've got to pitch the ball up, whether you're playing at the Gabba, down at the MCG or here at the SCG, you've got to pitch that brand new ball up. Your best chance of getting a wicket early on is caught in the slips, bowled or LBW, and it's hard to do that when you're bowling 2 foot outside off stump and bowling too short. So you've got to pitch the ball up. He, to me, is, you know, the bowler that is on fire at the moment. And why? He's bowling, as I said, that perfect length. He's tall, he hits very good areas, and his pace increased over the last 18 months. So, look, he's in a great place at the moment. He's confident. You know, he's gone past that 100 wicket barrier, so he's, you know, a great leader of the pack, as is Mitchell Stark.
Azhar Ali has done all the damage for Pakistan this tour. He's been remarkable with the bat. He's averaging over 100. We had a couple of opportunities to dismiss him yesterday, but they weren't to be. They could be costly.
Yeah, they could be. I mean, everyone's pointing the finger at David Warner because he's such a great fieldsman. He had 0.35 of a second, which is, I said yesterday on air, it's the same pace or the same amount of time if a guy's bowling 160k. So there's not a lot of time, less than half a second. Will it prove costly? I'm not sure about that. You know, the Australian bowlers have got to make sure that they get up this morning and get in as soon as first ball is. The thing that the Australians will have in their favour today is the pink venue. Everyone will be behind Australia. Everyone's in a really, really good mood. It's a good feeling out here. The crowd's coming in. As Arjun said, it's on 58. And Yunus Khan, I think he's the player that can stop Australia's opportunity and chance here. On 64 at the moment. He wants 100 on home soil.
JB, we saw a little bit of rain just poking through, yep. But I can tell you there's little spots of blue sky around. So let's do hope that we get play underway shortly. The inspection in about 4 minutes' time.
I can see the umps walking out. I can also see, I think, anyway, Nez and B. Paul Wilson, former very boring fast bowler for South Australia in the 90s, Big Blom. I just wander over to him and say, listen, big man, instead of boring the crap out of Ian Healy and Tom Parker, get the game started.
Look, we've tried. I'll tell you, we already went up and had a bit of a word to him before we came on air. So we're doing our best. Good. Down here, but apparently Brett Lee and I have no pull whatsoever. I mean, Brett's not even a member here.
Nah, I've got zero pull.
Hessian just being rolled out, but still across the centre of the pitch. As I say, the two umpires wandering out into the centre now. And you can't imagine, Skull, unless rain starts, that they wouldn't be starting play ASAP.
No, well, they're setting the stumps, as you say, the Hessian's halfway, umpire's having a look. You know, it's 10:26. They could have been out here 10 minutes ago, yep. Really. So, again, the game meanders along at its own pace and has been for 150 years, yeah. Sadly. But hopefully we're going to get some play. I don't know when, though, Jim.
All right, why don't we get to a break? And when we get back, we'll get Neroli and Bing onto the two umpires out there and find out exactly when we plan to start this third day's play.
Well, the rain has stopped at the SCG, which is absolutely fantastic news. The covers are off the pitch. Looks like we're going to get a little bit of action. If you're just joining us today, there's been no play. Pakistan resuming at 2 for 126 after Australia declared on a big total yesterday. Mark Howard with you. And these two esteemed gentlemen, Kerry O'Keefe and Lawrence Mooney. Kerry, SCG Pink Test, sun just poking its head through.
Yes, they've had no luck here, Howie, in recent times. Last year was rain ruined. But again, Sydney has let Glenn McGrath, Jay McGrath down early. But the prospects are pretty good now. Clouds are high. Stumps are up, umpires hovering, players ready. We're going to get play.
Everybody's turned out in their beautiful pink. I'm wearing the bandana around the neck, Tony Gregg style. I hope you noticed the reference there. Some people have also said Robin Williams in Lakaja Foal. But I'm not going to let that stop me express my great appreciation of the McGrath Foundation. Kerry, we have got for you the pink afro in the show bag down there, if you want to slip that on a bit later.
I will.
And Howie, you must be wearing the standard pink G-string, are you?
Well, it's funny. I've worn pink on the Big Bash for the last 28 straight nights, so I'm nearly done with pink. But for today, it's good to see the Channel 10 wardrobes dress the entire crowd, though, in pink today. Nellie Meadows is down on the ground looking fantastic in her pink frock. Nellie, it looks like it's clearing.
There is very good news down here. They've got the roller going down the pitch, so that is great news. That is meaning that we hopefully have played not too far away. They've just had a pitch inspection. We're waiting for official word to come through, but we're hoping that it's not too far away. I've had a chat to the curator, Tom Parker, yet again. Now, he sold me a bit of a furphy earlier by trying to be very positive and wishful thinking, but he's pretty confident. I showed him the radar, and he's pretty confident that the rain that is coming through will stay out to the coast. So there is a bit out on the coast, but we're really certainly hopeful that that won't hit us here and we'll get an afternoon full of play. So that is great news here. As I say, the roller on the pitch at the moment. And we're hoping that we will get, in fact, I'm getting word through right now from a Cricket Australia official, and we will have play starting at 1:40. So just under half an hour and we'll have play underway here. Day three, Jay McGrath Day.
Looking into the crowd, Howie, I wonder if you're getting the psychological effects of pink, because it says the pink is a calming and reassuring colour emotionally. So do you get that just looking out there today? Maybe it'll relax the players a little bit more. It might affect play quite positively. They use it in airports, at customs counters. They colour them a little bit pink to relax people, put them in a false sense of security when they go, have you got... Are you carrying any contraband, Mr. O'Keefe? What have you got smuggled in there?
And where have you got it smuggled?
Yeah. Oh, I plead the pink.
I tell you what, it has been embraced. I noticed when I arrived at the ground today, the police officers have got their pink hats on. Even here, when all the Sydney crew like you, Kerry, are having your lattes, pink milk in the media centre in the lattes.
Well, we do our best here, Howie. But Sydney does embrace this day.
Yeah.
I mean, by your mere attendance would be enough, but the fact that everybody seeks pink to be seen in the crowd, and in its halcyon days, and I talk back, guys, 7 or 8 years, I think it's been going 9 years, but when Ashes were here and there was 40,000 in the ground and it was 40,000 pinks, it was a sight to behold. Less here today, of course. Pakistan, not a big draw card. Series done and dusted, dead rubber, poor day weather-wise. Not the numbers, but still a lot of pink.
And it's all about community, isn't it, ultimately? People will always knock sport, for not meaning much, but essentially it brings people together. And when you've got a sport like cricket, that participates in a community event like the McGrath Foundation, it's a vanguard event that says we care about this and we're contributing our time and resources to it. And it's helped over 50,000 families, so it's tremendous stuff.
And I've known Glenn McGrath, Howie, since he came from Narromine, and he was a guy that came out with old school values of respect. And the thing that he stood him apart in the heathen world of cricket blokiness was his respect for people, women in particular. And he met the love of his life, Jane McGrath, and it was just a marriage made in heaven. And to lose her to this awful disease, it's just inspired this foundation, and it's been driven by Glenn and Tracy Bevan, of course. But Glenn's respect
for women in general was always there, and it's magnified even more through his foundation.
Well said, Kerry. You have a wonderful, wonderful way with words. We couldn't agree more. Narrowly, you've got a further update on the playing times and conditions for today.
That's right. As they get the rope out along the outfield, play restarts at 1:40 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. There is tea at 4:10 p.m. The scheduled conclusion for today will be 6:30 p.m. plus the half hour if required. Minimum overs for today is 68. And I can tell you, it's very warm down here. It's very humid, but very warm with the sun coming through as well.
For about 21 minutes away from a start here. Australia, 8 for 538 declared. Some wonderful batting by the likes of Peter Hanscom yesterday. Pakistan, 2 for 126. A really nice partnership going between Azhar Ali and Yunus Khan. Mark Howard with you, Lawrence Mooney and Kerry O'Keefe.
Can't wait for the resumption of play. So much to be determined in the afternoon session, guys. Will it turn? Will it reverse swing despite the moisture? Can Yunus Khan go to another 100, a farewell 100 in this country? Lots of questions, not many answers yet.
Are we calling it a sticky wicket? Are these the conditions for a sticky wicket?
Steamy, sticky, Terry Alderman style setup, I would have thought.
No, it's as dry as a bone. Let's not build this up too much.
The track is dead.
The track is dead.
The back of the Daily Telegraph today has Peter Hanscom and Matty Renshaw standing beside the honour board. Test centuries by Australians at the Sydney Cricket Ground. And that is a beautiful image. But I tell you what, those two faces look like they could be extras out of the Bodyline series, don't they? They are such traditional Aussie faces. One born in the UK, of course. And their scores... M.T. Renshaw, 184 against Pakistan. P.S.P. Hanscom, 110. Tremendous stuff in the future of Australian cricket.
Now, we're privy to an interview that was done by our respected colleague Mark Howard on Howie Games, which you can get on iView.
iTunes.
iTunes.
Yes.
And the latest one, I believe, is with the outstanding and perhaps our best ever batsman, in my opinion, Ricky Ponting.
Really? You would elevate him to our best batsman ever?
That I've seen, yes.
All right.
Without question. He shades Greg Chappell because he can play on all pitches against all types of bowling.
You're very much about the range, aren't you? The range of shots.
I love the expansive range. And although Greg Chappell was brilliant, this guy was a one-off. R.T. Ponting, Mowbray, Tasmania. And you've done an interview with him, Howie.
Yeah, sat down with him yesterday, actually. All sorts of sports people are featured on the Howie Games, but at the moment, during the cricket season, we're doing a lot of cricketers. So Brendan McCullum is next week, which I've already got in the can, and there's been Hodge and all sorts of people get KP away. But I sat down with Ricky yesterday. He's a great man, Ricky Ponting. He speaks very openly. You'll hear this is a bit of a compilation of all the stuff you can hear in the interview, but... What you won't hear in this part, you need to listen to the podcast on iTunes of Howie Games. It gets very emotional. I've never seen that side of Ricky Ponting talking about his young bloke who got really, really sick and what it means to him to support people with the Ponting Foundation as well. So it's a really different side of Ricky Ponting as well.
Now, I've heard a couple of interviews on the Howie Games, and excellent podcast because you do dig deep. And people actually, you must have a great bedside manner because people open up to you. What I'm wondering about in this wide-ranging interview with Ricky Ponting is, do we touch on the bourbon and beefsteak? Do we head up to the cross and ask exactly what happened up there?
We do cross the bourbon and beefsteak, and as Rick says, that he should have taken shares in the place because, by gee, has he given it some publicity over the last 20 years. But let's have a look. You'll hear about 8 or 9 minutes of Ricky Ponting here.
Yeah, I've listened to a number of the Howie Games. I'm looking forward to this one. Think Michael Parkinson interviewing technique with Damien Oliver's voice.
Thank you, Kerry. You can hear the Howie Games free on iTunes. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Mr. Hillier.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind. All right, let's hear from Ricky Ponting. Your uncle. Greg, he went on the Ashes tour where they won 4-0, didn't they? I think he might have played the first test. I presume you would have been seeing him as a young bloke. How old were you when he was starting to play at that level?
Yeah, well, I followed him around as a young bloke, to tell the truth. I mean, he played at the club that I was going to play at. He played at the Mowbray Cricket Club and, you know, then went on to play for Tassie and then went on to play for Australia, and that was the exact path that I wanted to follow. So, you know, I had... You know, along with Booney, who was playing for Australia at the time, I had a couple of guys that I could sort of chase after. And I remember when Greg got selected on that 89 Ashes tour and all his gear turned up at his family home and the baggy green was in his bag with his, you know, Aussie jumper and shirts and stuff. And quite often would sneak out into his bedroom when he wasn't home and just put the cap on and have a bit of a play with all his equipment and make sure I folded it all back up perfectly so it went back in the right spot. He didn't know that I'd been in there, but... Yeah, I mean, I remember picking that cap up for the first time, and I didn't put it on straight away. I picked it up and smelt it and felt it first, and then stuck it on my head. But so that in itself sort of made, I guess, the realization that it's possible for me to be able to do the same thing. It made it a little bit clearer, a little bit, you know, it was almost like I could reach out and grab it and feel it, that, you know, if I did the right things, that maybe a chance to play for Australia might come along for me as well.
A big moment this for Ricky Ponting. His first walk out to the crease for a test match innings. And they really are going to gather around him, see if they can make it a little bit tough. He's obviously going to be just a little bit tense. It's a great occasion.
You obviously started playing one days, and then it comes up every year at the Perth Test, and you debut against Sri Lanka, and you got your little goatee, and you're making runs, and then what did you get, 96, and then you got fired out, a bit stiff, I reckon. Looking back on
YouTube. I might have been a little bit unlucky on Test debut, but you know, by the same token, you're just out in the middle, and once again, you're living out that dream, and when that comes closer and closer, where your chance of making 100 on your Test debut, then the ultimate dream is, you know, might be coming reality. But
do you remember getting your cap then? Because you talked about your uncle's cap and having a look at it. Do you remember getting your cap? Was it?
It was the same thing. No, there wasn't. No, there were no presentations then. It was just
part of it. Which is a great thing in modern cricket now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And
you would have handed over a few.
I did, and it was. I actually felt it was my responsibility to, as the captain, to do it. And I felt the players would really have respected the fact that they were receiving their cap from their captain. And I mean, it's changed now, it's moved on now, and you know, lots of past players are doing the cap presentations now, which is a really nice touch as well. But no, that wasn't around when I debuted. It was just it turned up in your kit with your training gear and your playing shirts, and
was it?
Yeah, you just stuck it on and off you went. And even before that, I mean, you can ask Junior tonight when we get to the game, but I think they used to get one every season. They used to get a brand new cap every year, but that changed pretty quickly when a few of them started turning up on auction sites and things. But Well, I was hoping to play my whole career with the one baggy green cap, but that didn't eventuate, because I think after about maybe 10 or 15, 20 tests, mine actually got stolen out of my kit bag on a tour from Sri Lanka, on the way home from Sri Lanka. So
your baggy green did?
Baggy green did. So I had to write a letter to Cricket Australia to sign a few forms to say that I had lost it and that they'd give me another one. And from that moment, when I got the second one, then it travelled with me the whole time. It was in my backpack, on my person the whole time. I wasn't leaving it in my kit bag everywhere.
Ball well bowled, big appeal there for LBW. He's got it, he's given him out, LBW. That's hit him high on the leg. That's a very, very disappointed Ricky Ponting. Well, you can see him just holding there, and, well, what a disappointing moment that is for him. He's played so very, very well.
So you walk off for 96 in your first test innings. Are you absolutely stoked or are you absolutely gutted?
Nearly cried.
Did you?
Mm. When I got back in the room, because you sort of forget about how emotionally charged you're. Like, you're getting up towards what's probably the biggest moment of your entire life. I mean, that walking out on Test debut or being selected is the biggest moment of your life. But then you're out there in the heat of battle and you're about to make 100 on debut. Your emotion, you can imagine what's going on with your emotions. I mean, and then to be so close and have it taken away when I didn't feel like I actually did too much wrong, and you're walking off the ground with someone else's mistake costing you what. I think at that stage there might have only been a dozen or 10 people that have made 100 on Test debut, so it would have been nice to join that club. But then I got back in, and then you sit down, look down, and you think, and I just remember all that emotion started coming out, and I nearly cried, but it was just it was a pretty tense time, because I think we might have declared soon after and we're straight back out in the field, but so I didn't have that much time to think about it.
How many tests did you play before you felt comfortable that you were a part of the side and you weren't going out there batting for your spot every innings?
I think there was a real shift for me. I played, I don't know how many it was, I'm never good with stats or anything like that or numbers, but I played a lot of test matches batting down the order. I mean, that debut was at number 5, and then after that ended up slotting into the order at number 6, and to tell the truth, I was never that comfortable there. I never felt like I was an instrumental or solid part of the team until I got the opportunity to move up and bat at number 3. When I made that move up there, for me, that was when it was right, okay, this... You know, you're going to get your chance up the order. And Steve Waugh had moved me up there on a tour in England, actually. So, I think that was when, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the time that I met Rihanna and certain things happened in my life where things really started to change. But if someone asked me, I talk about it, getting the opportunity to bat at number 3 in the test team, because it was the extra responsibility that came with that I was happy with. I wanted the extra responsibility. I wanted to be the best player in the team. I wanted to be the best player in the world, and I didn't think I could do that at number 6. It was just a really foreign place for me to bat. So, but when I got that opportunity, that's when things started to change.
We've talked about the highs. what about the other side of it, which is professional sport? As you know better than anyone, what's been your low point when you're in charge of the team?
Well, no doubt losing 2005 Ashes as a captain was that was the absolute low point of captaincy for me, and probably low point for most of those players of their careers, I'd imagine. You know, we'd been so used to dominating, being a champion team for a long time. We went to England, you know, expected to win quite comfortably. We won the first test on our ear. You know, things turned around pretty quickly in the second test match.
Glenn McGrath stood on the ball.
We lost that game by a run. You know, and there's much talked about me winning the toss and bowling that game and things like that. And, it was just one of those series where we were just a little bit off, but every time there was just something happening in most games that was sort of out of our control and the momentum went, and or we were controlling it and we'd have a run out or something like that would just happen that, you know, you look back now and just wonder how those things happened. But it also, as it started to unfold, it also became pretty clear that we might have been a bit complacent with the way we were going about it. We had every other team in the world chasing what we were doing. England were going out of their way with what they were spending on coaches. They'd had all Australian coaches gone in over there. You know, Duncan Fletcher was the head coach, Troy Cooley was the bowling coach, Rod Marshall was in charge of the academy. They looked at our model in Australia and said, we're going to do whatever it takes, how much it takes, whatever it takes, we're going to, you know, do whatever we can to catch up to these boys. And that was when they started to catch up, you know. Even with the way that they'd prepared, you know, the reverse swing bowling, they prepared dry wickets knowing that Warney was going to have an impact, but they felt they had an edge over us with the reverse swing, and they did. So, look, they were well-drilled, well-led, they played well, and we were just a little bit off in a few areas. And you know, as I said, That's the low point of my career. Then we got back to Australia when we sat down and addressed things in a way that, in a more open and honest way than I'd ever seen a cricket team deal with anything as an organisation as well, not just as a group of players, but all contracted players, all administrators. We sat down and we got to the bottom of what we needed to do and how we're going to get better. And then, you know, the next 12 months was just about the most special 12 months I've played, I think.
From the outside looking in, and I said I didn't know you at that stage, the one point to me where it looked like, just watching on telly, that you just had a gut full of it all was when everything happened with Andrew Symes and the Indians, and you'd still have to front up and do the press conferences, and you can explain the background better than me, but to me at that point it looked like if someone had said to you, mate, you can walk out the door and go and disappear and spend time with your family, you might have done it. That's how it looked.
Yeah, no, look, I wouldn't have done it because it wasn't about me. It was about, you know, the other 11 or 12 teammates of mine, and that was the way that captaincy always was for me. Even my playing days. I mean, to be totally honest, if it was just about me, I probably would have retired after my 100th test. Things couldn't get any better in my career at that point. You know, I was averaging over 60 as a batter.
Mm.
I just made 100 in each innings in my 100th test. I played in winning World Cup teams. I won Ashes series. Done most things in my career. It wasn't much more for me to gain, but it wasn't ever about that for me. You know, I'm looking at the young guys that come into the team. I needed to be around for them, to guide them, to help them, to show them. Even when I stood down from the captaincy, it would have been easy just to walk away from that as well and say, okay, well, I'm not captain anymore, so I'm not playing. But no, there were young guys coming in that I was worried about, you know, and I wanted to help, and I wanted to be around to see them blossom and turn into better players. So, but with this Symes thing, I mean, you can see how his career ended. He'd had enough. He didn't know who to trust and who he could talk to, and if the people that were supposed to have his back actually had his back or not. And that, you know, I was the same. I felt let down as well by the whole thing. It didn't work out the way that it should have for Simo and for Australian cricket. And to tell the truth, probably for world cricket, because it just allowed India to show how much power that they had on the world game. And if Cricket Australia weren't going to stand up for them, then who was going to stand up against India? So they were the positions that I was coming from, if you like, and I mean, and the charge the way it was, I mean, the racial vilification thing, well, I've been in meetings for 15 years being told about how I'm supposed to handle racial vilification and what I'm supposed to do, and then when the moment came and I handled it the way that I was supposed to and Cricket Australia instructed me to handle it, they didn't back us up, so that was difficult.
Fascinating trailer there, the Howie Games, Mark Howard's interview with the great Ricky Ponting, can't wait to hear that, Howie, very well done. Players trust you. Ricky's not an easy interview, and I don't know, for a 42-kilo guy with a son called Penguin, I wouldn't trust you.
Thank you, Gary.
But Ricky Ponting has. It's a great insight. Many congratulations on it, and available on iTunes. Howie Games, RT Ponting. Brad Haddon's with us, fresh from the reunion. How was it, Hads? New South Wales having a get-together?
Yeah, it was pretty standard. I looked for Phil Emery outside watching the cricket, and you know where he was? silly me, I should have walked straight to the bar and that big head was just there.
Yeah, melon.
All smiles. But to Howie's podcast with Ricky Ponting, it's great for the Australian public to hear this, because that's the Ricky Ponting that I grew up and respected so much to play with. He's the best leader of men I've ever played with, and it's great the Australian public are hearing that now.
I mean, I think there's been 20 Howie Games interviews. No fees have been paid yet for them.
Nor to me, Kerry. You'll notice there's no advertising on the podcast.
But, mate, they're just great insights into a number of great Australians. I've heard just with Trevor Hendy, and I can't wait for the Ponting one, and one with Brendan McCullum upcoming,
yeah,
which
comes up next
you're
week.
Very proud of.
Yeah, it's a good one. Now, let's move on to the cricket here.
Oh, no, more about you, Howie.
There's a little bit of rain around at the SCG. There's beautiful scenes out on the ground at the moment. Glenn McGrath has been out on the ground. He'll be joining us in the Triple M commentary box a little bit later on. The umpires are coming out on the ground, and the Australians are coming out on the ground with their magnificent pink baggy hats on, which is just a wonderful scene at the SCG. The Pakistanis have already been out having a chat to Glenn and having their hats and handing them over to Glenn. It's just a wonderful, wonderful scene, Kerry. It really is. It's. I think Lawrence got it right before when he said it's a moment that shows you what sport's all about in some ways.
Oh, and he's a much-loved figure, Hads, isn't he, Glenn McGrath? The players just genuinely respect what he is as a man, as a cricketer, and his foundation, of course. So this is a great moment for the Australian cricket team and the pink cap.
It is, but I see this is not so much about sport, to be honest. This is about the legacy Jay McGrath's left and that Glenn McGrath and the McGrath Foundation's continued. What they've done to help people with and create awareness for breast cancer has just been amazing. So this is more of a personal touch. This is not about sport here. This is just about a great family and the legacy that they've left to everyone around the world.
And the sad news is, of course, that the Hessians going back on the pitch. So this ceremony has gone on, and it is a very respectful ceremony. And the crowd booed prior to it because the rain started and the covers were being prepared to cover the strip. So frustration all around here at the SCG Day 3. Plenty of cricket to be played, an enthusiastic crowd, but no action.
Yeah, it's really, really disappointing. Let's get back to the game for a moment. Obviously, I wasn't here yesterday, and I was at airports and jumping in and out and seeing a little bit on the television. I saw Pakistan at 2 for under 10, maybe 2 for 6 they were, and then I went off to the cricket and I thought, well, I'll see tonight. They were 8 for. Must have been a wonderful, wonderful partnership between Yunus and Azhar. We've seen what Azhar's done throughout the series, but I guess the Yunus Khan that we know and love, probably the last time we see him playing Test cricket in Australia. Wonderful to see him get some runs.
Oh, I think Ali, he just maintained that fine touch he's had out throughout the series, and he's just needed some port, and Yunus showed that yesterday, and it's a great opportunity to witness Yunus play. He'll go down as one of the greats of the game, to be honest, and his record is the best batsman to come out of Pakistan. So it was a pleasure to watch him dig in yesterday and get that 100 partnership.
And that's the thing, that there have been some tremendous offside drivers come to this country over the last few decades, but I don't think there has been a better one than Yunus Khan. When he launches into that cover drive, and the Australian players know it's his signature shot, they set 2 or 3 slips for it, but yesterday at 64 not out, he didn't nick. And they'll be hoping for that again when play resumes. They'll be tempting him with the gap at cover, but he'll accept it because that's the shot that's got him so many thousand test runs, a test average over 50. He's one of the greats of the game, Yunus Khan. Attempting a tough hurdle at 39 years of age, coming to Australia, he got 60 in Brisbane, second dig, he's 64 not out. He'd have been disappointed in Brisbane. He's a great converter of 50s in the hundreds. He will definitely be looking at 3 figures here.
Some good news and some bad news for the test. Pinktest.com.au to donate to the McGrath Foundation for the test. That wonderful organisation is looking to raise $390,000, currently at $165,184. Get yourself involved at pinktest.com.au. We were meant to be starting play 4 minutes ago, but there was just a light shower across the MCG. It looks like it's almost blown away. The Hessian is still out on the ground. Apart from that, there is a lot of people here wanting to see some cricket. No play today. Pakistan will resume on their overnight score. And Azhar Ali and Yunus Khan, 58 and 64 respectively, with a score at 2 for 126. chasing down Australia's 8 for 538 Mark Howard with your Kerry O'Keefe, Brad Haddon. Finally, we've got this man in the box ready to go as well, HG Nelson. Hello, HG. Disappointing.
Oh, well, yes, in some respects, Howie, but I'm watching some excellent automotive sport out there at the moment. A couple of trucks with big tyres on them going around dragging a bit of rope behind them. And it has been a parade of vehicles this morning. If you've just joined us in the commentary or at the ground, you've missed a terrific display of some of the finest sopping technology the world has. That's right, some of the finest in the world. And I'm just wondering if I can come back to the game as opposed to the automotive sport. Where do we think the match is poised at now with this passing of rain time? I'm wondering if the predictor, Chewy, if you've got an update on the what the Bashita is, my very dear colleague in the box, Gus Warland, calls it. What's the Bashita thinking at the moment?
Well, it is saying that Pakistan will be all out for 410. That is almost by the close of play today. In fact, it is tipping that we'll go into a fifth day, HG.
Well, that's a tremendous update. And what does the rest of the panel think about that as a suggestion? 410, it's a hell of a score, really, given where they were for 2 for 6 a while ago.
I don't have a great deal of faith in the equipment behind us, to be completely.
I wonder why.
I do with the operator, but not the actual equipment itself.
What I find funny, before the rain, they were predicted to get 380. Now it's rained for 2 hours and they're going to get more runs. I don't understand the predictor.
Well, it does factor in the conditions, so somehow it comes out with that mathematical probability-type result, Hats.
It is not the gospel according to St. Chew.
No, it's not. What's happening in the sheds at the moment, Hats? You've played with a lot of these guys, and there's a few younger guys in there now. What goes on in the rooms at the moment? Who's bouncing around? Who's relaxed? What happens?
Right now it's frustration. The guys would have... Our guys would have been playing cards. Warner would have been annoying everyone. The spinners would have been just sitting in the corner, weird as they are. But right now it would be frustrating. Everyone's got their creams on, spikes ready, zinc cream on and ready to play. So they, like everyone here in the crowd, they want to be out there right now.
And that was the key. I mean, if we'd had a full day, Pakistan would want to have been within 100 of Australia by stumps with a few wickets in hand. Australia would want to have been batting again. Neither of those scenarios will probably happen now. The possibility that Australia are batting again, maybe, but a lot of time chewed out of the game already.
These conditions, though, could suit the Australian seamers. We've had a bit of drizzle on the wicket, and it might allow Hazelwood and Stark to get into this wicket a little bit early, more than it would if we didn't have the overhead conditions. So it'd be interesting to see how the wicket plays straight away.
Yep.
And I ducked out earlier to move my 20-cent pieces on the pitch because I knew that people would go to the Tarps R Us pitch map and find out where they were and communicate that information to the Pakistanis. So I've had to duck out and move them. Have a look at that pitch map and you'll get an idea where they are at the Verona cinema end of the ground.
Let's get down to Nerilee Meadows. If you can back that up, Nerilee, you're a better person than I in broadcasting. Have you got an update for us, Nez?
Oh, it's really frustrating because it's this simplest, tiniest little bit of mist that's around. But we haven't seen heavy rain all day and yet we haven't seen a ball bowled. It is really frustrating stuff down here. And we've been getting frustrated up in the commentary box as well because, the rules of cricket. But today has been a perfect example. Really, they could have played through all of this. There's no doubt about it. It's never gotten heavy. I don't even have my umbrella up right now. So it's pretty frustrating stuff. They were supposed to get underway quite a while ago now. But, look, they're hoping it will be soon. They don't have the heavy covers on out in the middle. They're still running the rope around the outfield. So hopefully we're not too far away. But can I just implore everyone at home, though, to make sure that you do still donate to Jay McGrath Day, because they took a real hit last year when the entire day was washed out here at the SCG, and it's not great. They're hoping to raise, I think it's $390,000 to pay for a nurse for 3 years. So if everyone at home can just donate what they can, because it's unfortunate that 2 years in a row we're getting a rain-affected Jay McGrath Day.
Spot on, Nez. Pinktest.com.au. HG, you have covered all sorts of sports all around the world. Does Test cricket need to make a leap into the future as far as not playing in conditions like these?
Well, I'm just wondering if the rules concerning rain, etc., ever come up at board level. And if so, I wonder what the positions are put by various nations. Should we have a rain gauge out there? Should we have some sort of piece of technology that's a phone put down and when the rain hits it, the communication comes up to the central umpiring position which says, yes, enough, or something like this? It seems, can I describe it as amateur hour? It seems there's a lot of variable opinions, and I don't know where we go with it, Howie. I mean, show business and cricket have never made attractive bedfellows at all, and sadly we have that again writ large today. Tremendous day, tremendous occasion, but sanity has left the building.
But I remember in 1951, Ron Roberts steamed down towards the old Sheridan stand in an Ashes test for Australia, St George Winger, and scored the match-winning try in the biggest bog of all time. They played that day. I know it was rugby league. Do you recall it, Hads?
No. I just missed that. I was born just after that, I think.
Yeah.
I was rotated.
As a player, Hads?
As a player, all I'm concerned about is player safety. I know we're looking at the rain now, and I don't think it's unsafe to play. But at the start of the day, I understand the rain was too heavy to get on. But at the moment, I think we're just being too picky. I don't think player safety is a concern out there at the moment.
There seems to be this, I'm not even sure it's written in the rule books, but there seems to be a general theory in cricket that if it is raining, you cannot come on the ground until it stops raining. So no matter how light that rain may be, Kerry, it prevents any play.
And that's the problem at the moment. It's raining. They're not going to go out there and inspect until it stops. And even though it's fairy pizzle, isn't it? That's all it is.
Is that what it is, isn't it?
I think it is. Angel, isn't it? Is that the term?
What is it?
Angel pizzle.
Pakistan haven't resumed today. There is just very little moisture in the air, but it's enough. A frustrating amount to keep the test from getting underway today. Mark Howard with you, Kerry O'Keefe, HG Nelson, the great Brad Haddon. And gentlemen, when you look around this ground with a wave going at the moment, you've got the O'Reilly stand, then the Victor Trumpa stand, across to the Churchill, the Barongal, and the magnificent members. Kerry and Brad, you two have had the great pleasure of playing cricket here. I think it must be one of the great experiences in cricket because this is a magnificent arena.
And it doesn't matter if it's not full, Howie. I mean, I play a lot of Sheffield Shield cricket in front of 50 people. But I lived at Cogra and I would get here two and a half hours before the start of play just to have a cup of tea with the room attendant and a milk arrowroot biscuit and just sit in the viewing area and look out. Because I was playing for my state, I was playing in a high standard competition, and I was in heaven, and I just soaked up every game I had, every day of every Sheffield Shield match, despite the low attendances. It was just a joy to come to this ground.
The change room themselves at the SCG, Brad, can you describe it to the people that will never be lucky enough to get in there?
That's the one of the most privileged positions to get to be involved with the New South Wales cricketer and Australian cricketer. You have your own space. For example, you might have the Ricky Ponting area where he's got gloves and things everywhere, no different to Steve Smith, where Michael Clarke's things would be lined up everywhere. And different people have control their own area. Mine was perfectly placed, my shoes. But this scares me a little bit. I've got something in common with you.
Well, this will be interesting.
I used to also get to the ground early and grab myself a coffee and just sit and look out the ground. Just enjoy this great ground. Because someone growing up in country New South Wales, I only ever wanted the opportunity to play one game at the New South Wales cricket ground. Sydney cricket ground, sorry. And had the opportunity to play my whole career here. I was just blessed.
Yeah. It was funny, after the game, Hads, in the 70s, the home dressing room was just above the cellar, and the cellarman used to sit there, and after play, people would just drink long necks, and when we wanted more long necks, somebody would get a bat and just go boom, 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 and the cellarman would come up with another slab of longies. It was good to be over the top of the cellar.
Oh, not again. Something else we
another
have in
common.
I'm starting to feel sick. Matthew Hayden's last test, I remember sitting in the change room and we're enjoying a beer together. He said, just wait, you'll hear a thump come up from the bottom of the floor. And he kicked, nothing back. So we waited another half an hour, had a beer or two, then he kicked the floor again. And we heard something back that was the broom hitting the floor. So we ran around and spent the next 4 hours in the cellar of the Trust. So, Jamie Barclay, thank you very much for that night. I cannot remember a thing.
But you're sitting in seats that have been filled by the custodians before you, some of the biggest names in Australian cricket.
Oh, indeed. I mean, I changed where Alan Kippax used to change. And my dad worked at the Alan Kippax sports store through the 40s, 50s and 60s. So I met Mr. Kippax a number of times, and to sit in the same dressing room in the same spot that he changed from was That was quite something for me.
That was one of the most daunting things as a young cricketer, walking into the change room. I remember walking in for one of my first games and just sort of standing at the door, counting, one, two, three, there's seven people here. I need to wait for three more to arrive to know where I need to sit, because I didn't want to put my bag where Steve wore or Mark wore. If I put it where Mark Wall's bag would have been, it would have been sitting out in the middle of the SCG. So there's a respect thing, and people cherish that their own little space in the change room. So, and I love that part of the game. And I would have done the same thing to Peter Neville if he had to put his bag in my spot as well.
Mark Howard with your Kerry O'Keefe, Brad Haddon, HG Nelson. Once again, we go down onto the ground, Nearly Meadows, Nez. Come on, give me an update that I want to hear now, please.
Still a really fine mist going on. So the umpires aren't on the field. There's no time for an inspection at the moment. But the good news is that because the roller's already been on the pitch, that once we do make a decision to get play underway, it shouldn't be too far away. There's not that half an hour lag like there was last time once the roller comes on. So the rope around the outfield has gone off, so that's another good sign. As I say, it's literally a mist out here. There's nothing more to it. And as you say, the crowd's getting pretty restless. So we're hoping very much so that play will get underway soon. The weights have come off the Hessian cover out here. So we're just waiting for that inspection time to come about, and then hopefully not too far away.
Thank you, Nez. I really enjoyed you two talking about sort of the history of the game and being and then following in the footsteps of some absolute superstars of the game. HG,
yes.
Are you a romantic as far as sport's concerned? Are you into the fabric and the beautiful game that is cricket?
No, not at all, Howie. I've got no stories of playing for the Oaklands Primary School in South Australia or the Nuriapa High, as I went to, in later years. Sadly, they made me captain, which was the worst thing they could have done. I had a miserable time and moved on to other things. Having said that, though, I'm a great believer in following what happens next. I'm much more interested in the first over. And once the first over's bowled, I'll be much more interested in the second over. And even when the match is over, I won't reflect on the match that's just been played. I'll be looking forward to that first ball in India. That's the HG Nelson view.
Well, I like that view, so let's do that right now. What do we need to do early, Australia here, to make this test match one that can fizz along and get a result rather than one that just sees Pakistan bat and bat and bat?
Well, Mitchell Stark needs two century crushes in the first quarter of an hour to get rid of Yunus Khan and Misbah-ul-Haq. Then it's the wiki and the tail. Australia can lead by a long way and be batting at stumps. That would perfect scenario, Australia. Of course, Pakistan need to be just to bat. They've just got to get as close as they can to this Australian total.
Well, I don't want to cross across what HG said, because he's a man and looking forward. But just back to yesterday, Hadj, you were just having a chat with him this morning that possibly you thought Australia weren't quite at their brilliant best.
Yeah, I thought the bowlers did a reasonable job yesterday to create some chances. With the fielding, I think Australia would be a little bit disappointed. David Warner sets such high standards for himself, and he had the opportunity yesterday for two runouts. Someone of David Warner's standing in the field, I'd expect him to take one of those, and he missed a tough chance late in the day. So I thought Australia were just a little off the ball yesterday, and we could be sitting here now with Pakistan really in a lot of trouble if we had taken those half chances yesterday.
Mm. Yeah, they had their opportunities, the Australians. Yunus and Azhar have been absolutely fantastic. Just a thought on Azhar Ali. He's come out here. We've hardly got him out for the entire test series. He has been fantastic. He made a 300 already this year, Hads, and he's gone on with that, hasn't he?
Yeah, what I've been impressed about, traditionally players from the subcontinent struggle on Australian wickets, but Ali's come out, he's maintained that great touch through the series. He's really put a high price on his wicket, and he's really looked determined to show world cricket that his stats in the subcontinent can be turned over to Australian conditions. So he can hold his head high. I think he's been outstanding for the whole summer.
Is there anyone that you've seen in world sport that you could possibly compare him to, HG? You've covered so many sports in so many places over the years. Obviously, you're big on the ping pong and that type of thing. Is there another athlete that reminds you of Azhar Ali?
Well, Hulk Hogan comes to mind immediately.
Of course
he does. The great WWE wrestler. Hulk hardly ever lost a match. Maybe there was a ladder match back in about 1972 that he lost, but generally speaking, could turn, in cricket parlance, 100 into 200s and a 200 into 500.
It's not his physique?
Well, his physique, very similar. Very similar. You only have to close your eyes and squint from the commentary box and imagine the blonde wig on, and there it is. It's Hulk Hogan.
Hopefully Azhar Ali doesn't have any of those videos that have come out and caused a few issues for the
Hawks. Well, issues, yeah, sure, issues. But, you know, that's remember, of course, we're comparing oranges and apples here. Different sports require, as you'd well know, Howie,
yes.
Different sports require different approaches. And it is very hard to compare WWE with, you know, obviously world cricket. But when we look at now, what we've got before us now, well, it could be fairly similar. Nothing's going on.
No.
That's right.
It's funny. HG talks about getting 500. On this day in 1993, Brian Lara got 277. He'd have got 500 that day. Where were you, Hads? 93.
No, I would have still been in... I would have been in Queanbeya.
Okay.
I was here.
Were you here, HG?
I was.
He was. He got run out for 277. That was 500 nipped in the bud. I've not seen a player ever so dominant. And it was a strong Australian attack. McDermott, Warne, Matthews on a turner. And it was turning. It was ragging square. Brian Lara could have batted with a swizzle stick that day. Got run out. I was going to see at least 400, maybe 500 in a test match. I was so saddened. And the SCG crowd, and there were plenty here that day. It was the strongest standing ovation I think I've seen.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was sort of one of those things of, you know, where you sort of felt blessed to be here to watch it.
Yeah.
A very unusual occasion.
It
very
was.
Unusual occasion.
And one of the players, the best players ever, BC Lara, West Indies.
Went on to call his daughter Sydney after this magnificent venue. You would have come up against him, Hads, at various stages, Brian Lara?
Yeah, well, I think he was the best player I've ever played against.
Really?
To be honest. The way he looked like he just dictated where he wanted the bowler to bowl to him. And that was guys like Brett Lee, Glenn McGrath. He just had a way of making the ball exactly where he wanted to do it, played at that time. So
what
he
type
was an extraordinary
what type
player.
Of cat was he, Brian Lara, off the field?
I tell you one thing, I didn't spend much time with him off the field. One thing Ricky Ponting always stressed to us is never engaging. And I remember playing a game in Malaysia against the West Indies, and a young spinner at the time, Dan Cullen, sort of Lara blocked the first ball back and he shaped to throw it at him and said something. And Lara's eyes just changed. He looked at me and I'm looking at my feet going, don't acknowledge him, Brad, don't acknowledge him. And next thing you know, he basically just ruined Dan Cullen's career in the next 15 minutes. But he was a player you didn't want to let get into the contest. So there was just dead silence out there when he came out to bat.
Still no play here. I tell you what, I've got a good half an hour that I can start discussing on Brett Lee's wardrobe, though, because this is a man that is resplendent today. He is crisp. He's got some magnificent pants on. He's got a crisp white shirt,
pants.
A little sort of crocodile belt and a pink jacket on. This is a man that is wasted at the SCG. He should be on the catwalks in Milan, Bradley.
But it takes a lot of work to look like that. I've been admiring Brett all day. He's a beautiful person. But if you look at his backpack, what he has to eat, he had for lunch half a piece of celery. He had two stripes of carrot for breakfast. So to maintain that look, he's hard work.
I've only got one word for him, and that is gorgeous. He is a gorgeous-looking man, Brett Lee.
And you know why he went to the New South Wales players' reunion at lunchtime? To make the other players feel bad about themselves.
They're having beers, and Brett was into his protein shake at the break. Great to see the sun shining at the SCG, Mark Howe, with you, Brett Lee, about to join us. Pakistan lost one wicket in that rained, shortened middle session. They are currently 3 for 177, trailing Australia by 361. The wicket to four was a run out, Azhar Ali. Great work by Mitchell Stark. Misbah al-Haq, the Pakistani captain, is 18 not out. And Yunus Khan, he's been there 181 deliveries, and he is 84 not out. We're in the tea break. Brett Lee joins me now. Brett. In your last little stint in commentary, you were talking about, I was talking about the fact that lunch I brought Ricky Ponting to the table.
On your podcast.
The Howie Games. Thank you for that.
Very good, actually.
And I was discussing the fact that about time you brought something to the table, and I set you the task to go off and bring a rock and roll star to Triple M Rocking Test Cricket, and we weren't wanting the Veronicas or High Five or something of the like. So have you produced someone or not?
Have I produced? I have produced the best.
The best.
Now, you said go and get a rock god, go and get a rock star. What about if I said something along the lines of kids out driving Saturday afternoon?
Okay, you're going a bit cryptic. Well, apparently this guest's on the line, and I'll be the judge of whether you've come through or not. Welcome to Triple M Test Cricket. I'm not sure who it is, but hello, and please introduce yourself.
G'day, how are you? It's Jimmy Barnes here. What's going on?
Barnes, hello, mate.
Brett Lee, congratulations. Jimmy Barnes, welcome to Triple M Rocking Test Cricket. Well done,
listen,
bigger.
Listen, guys, I'm in the southwest of New Zealand camping, and I walked to the top of the hill, and I looked at my phone, and I had a message saying, you're going to call Brett. Hello?
Well, mate, now, how you will be?
I stayed on top of the hill so I could call you. How are you going, pal?
Good, mate. How are you? What are you doing over there? You camping?
Yeah, just camping, walking, trekking and camping.
Fantastic. And with your lovely family?
Yeah, gorgeous.
Now, Jimmy,
how's it going? How's the cricket?
The cricket's good. Pakistan are 3 for 177. Jimmy, I only had the pleasure of meeting you once, which was on a golf course, and you were playing in a PGA up event up there at Coolum. And quite a handy sportsman, it must be said. Hit the ball okay.
We did it. We won the Pro-Am a couple of times there with Bernard Fanning and Pete Lonard.
That's exactly right. So you're a sporting fan? Are you a cricket fan, Jimmy?
I'm a big sporting fan. You know, have you seen Brett play golf?
No, I haven't.
He's a cracker.
Well, we're down for Jimmy's birthday for his 60th, and we had a game. I was playing with Jimmy's son, Jackie, and couldn't get many off the tee, but that was a good day. That had a lot of fun.
It was awesome. Now, listen, guys, so listen, really good. Brett, I would ring in for you anytime, pal. You know that.
So you're a star, mate.
Put your line on Triple M, all right? You're a rock star.
Well, we're that excited that you're on. And Brett was just saying to me, he went and saw you at Anita's Theatre. Brett, you must tell me and the audience exactly what you just was telling to me in the break.
So Jimmy is now currently doing, and Jimmy, I'd like you to explain more to the people at home listening. Working Class Boy, it's obviously a story about your childhood, what you've been through. Mate, that is the best concert I've ever been to in my life. We went and saw that at Anita's Theatre in Thurrul, about 20 minutes from where I grew up.
Yeah.
How confronting was it doing that?
For me, it was very confronting. I mean, listen, that stuff that I wrote in that book, a lot of that stuff I hadn't talked to anybody about until I wrote it down. So, you know, to actually, you know, it's bad enough talking to your bloody mates and your siblings about it.
Yeah.
But to go out in front of an audience and talk about that stuff, it was quite challenging. But at the same time, you know, every night I go out there and it stressed me out, but it'd be really rewarding because, you know what, there's a lot of people out there who went through the same sort of stuff, you know. It's a life experience. We all share bloody good times and bad times. So, I was really happy to get out and talk about it. We did a show at the Opera House. It was absolutely unbelievable. You know, the people have responded really well to the book. We sing them a bunch of songs, and the songs I used to listen to when I was a kid growing up. So, it's a different type of show. It's really good fun.
Jimmy, the book is called Working Class Boy, and it's been right at the top of the Australian charts. And as you said, you mentioned all sorts of issues along your life. It's an amazing read, so congratulations for that. We're in a sporting style environment at the moment. You put so much energy and effort into your concerts. How do you stay in good nick to go up there and be able to entertain the people?
Mate, you know what? Just for years, I've been all during the Chisel years, I was doing martial arts, and you know, I'd be drinking like a fish at night and training during the day. You know, to perform at your best, you've got to stay fit. It's like any sports person, any musician, anybody that's playing high pressured stuff. And you know, when we played, you know, as a solo performer and as Chisel, it was always very intense, very high pressure, and hard and fast. A bit like Brett's bowling. And so you've got to stay fit. So I've done lots of stuff. You know, swim, bloody, you know, yoga. You know, you martial arts.
How do you keep your vocal cords going the way they are? Because, you know, you go hard, you know, you don't sort of go 50-50. You are flat out from song one.
You know, I'm just one of those guys. I guess I'm really lucky. I was born screaming, and I've been screaming since the day I was born. And, I've got one of those voices. I describe it like a Mack truck. It's really hard to get started, but once you get going, you can't stop it.
Jimmy,
just really lucky.
I can't picture you camping, but we must let you go back to your camping. You're a massive, massive part of Triple M, and your songs get a massive workout, as they should. Thanks for ringing in and fulfilling Brett's dreams here on Triple M Cricket. I didn't think he'd come through, but he did.
I'll ring up for Brett anytime. He's my mate.
We appreciate your time. Thanks for having a chat with us on Triple M Cricket, Jimmy Barnes.
Good on you, Jimmy. You're a legend,
Jimmy
mate.
Jimmy Barnes. Well, I bow down to you because I thought you were battling away and I thought you were going to come with a C or a D grader, but you've gone A grade. Well done, Brett.
Mate, gone straight to the top. You know, like he is the world's best bloke, and his beautiful wife, Jane. He's got a wonderful family. The thing he does do, he performs with all of his children as well. You've got Jackie, his son plays the drums, and Mahalia. We know how good she can sing. So, wholesome guy. Obviously fits Triple M. It's what it's all about. You know, we combine sport with some music. So there you go, Howie. How was that?
I think that was brilliant. And I think next year in the Ashes, you need to start day one of the first test and slowly build up to a crescendo on day five of the final test when the Ashes will be decided, and I'm thinking sort of Tiger Woods territory.
Just don't ask me to sing.
No, I'd like to hear you sing. Listen, a couple of quick thoughts on the match here in front of us. We're going to get to Narrowly Meadows very shortly with all the latest in the world of cricket. A good little session for the Pakistanis, although loss of Azhar Ali, it might have been the only way we could get him out to run him out the way he's going.
Yeah, and look, I think just poor match awareness from, you know, the non-striker, looking to call him through. But look, Australia's done well. You know, they've hung in there. Pakistan have batted, I think, well. On what is a very flat wicket, 3 for 177. I want to see the Aussies come out now and go all out in attack. I want to see maybe give the ball to Mitchell Starc, let him run in and try and ruffle a few feathers. You know, maybe bowl some chin music. Keep the spinner going from one end, but rotate your quicks and bowl some chin music. You know, see what they've got to offer. Get stuck in and get a breakthrough. If you can get three or four in the next session, you know, that just sets up the whole day for tomorrow.
Do you like seeing the spinners operate from both ends? At this point, I know you get a bit edgy because you want to see the quicks on, but it brings something to Test cricket.
Yeah, I do. I was saying this morning to Nez prior to us going on air, I said, look, I want to see the spinners operate from each end. What I do want to see, though, is the wicket. It's not the spinners' fault they're not getting the purchase that they've asked for. You know, the issue is that the wicket's so flat, there's not a lot of rough. We haven't seen the sun really today. It's been overcast. We've obviously been off for rain. So the wicket hasn't had the opportunity to dry out the way it should on a traditional three and a bit sort of day old wicket. Tomorrow, hopefully, if the sun's out, it will dry out a fair bit. It will scuff up. That's when the spinners will definitely come into play.
Mark Howe with you, Brett Lee, and this next lady, if she's not already, she's on the way to becoming the number one cricket journalist in the country, Narrowly Meadows. Hello, Nezza.
How are you?
Great to see you. We're not talking about the weather, which is fantastic. All right, the world of cricket, the main news here at the SCG today is the fact Matty Wade's not out keeping. What's been happening there, Nez?
It was very interesting. I was sitting in the press box and I was noticing that Doc Bruckner ran onto the field and then paused, and then I saw that Peter Hanscom came off and started putting some pads and things on, and I was like, what's going on here? And then one of the other journos was keeping an eye on Wade, who had hunched over, and he said there's something wrong with Wade, and I've immediately got up and run into the Triple M commentary box because I've put two and two together that Wade was sick. And
you
Peter
were
Hanscom,
literally running too, weren't you, Pink Frock, which was a good effort.
I literally ran, getting my exercise in for the day, and noticed there that Peter Hanscom was padding up. Obviously, he's a part-time keeper, or probably a little bit better then, and he carries his gloves around, I believe, for this very occasion. The only other time that I've seen it happen live at a test match is when Phil Hughes took the gloves when Matthew Wade came on to bowl down in Hobart in 2012, and Matthew Wade still tells me to this day that he bowled 132.1 kilometres an hour. He was pretty happy about that. So very unusual circumstances. The good news is it's not serious for Matthew Wade. It's a stomach bug, and so he's gone back to the hotel and they're hoping that he'll recover overnight. So that is good news. But in the meantime, Petey Hanscom has the gloves, and tell you what, if Matthew Wade was brought in for chirpiness, then Peter Hanscom would keep his spot for even greater chirpiness. He hasn't shut up since he put on those gloves.
Yeah, it's all part of being a keeper. You get the gloves, you start to chirp. And I think Matthew Wade just preparing himself for the subcontinent tour. Just making sure that, you know, the stomach bug, just getting ready.
Building getting up set. The immune system,
exactly.
You reckon?
Narrowly, other news going around, specifically at start with the Big Bash?
Yeah, it certainly is. We've heard that Andre Russell is out for the next 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring, which of course rules him out for the rest of the Big Bash. It's a left hamstring. In comes Carlos Brathwaite for the Thunder, which is actually great news because he's the man that had 19 to win off the last over at the World T20 and hit 4 consecutive sixes in the final of last year's World T20. So they put him on the world stage. We also got a really great look at him last year here at the SCG and throughout the summer. And in fact, a special moment for him here at the SCG was the fact that his mum, Jocelyn, actually had breast cancer. And he brought up a 50 here on Jay McGrath Day and tribute it to his mum, which was lovely. But also, it was just a wonderful moment last night. Let's have a listen to that final ball. It was remarkable start from the Thunder.
6 to win, 4 for a super over. Morgan!
Oh, there it is! Young beauty!
Oh, 6 off the final ball! The Thunder is still alive! What a finish! It's spotless! Owen Morgan, you are the man!
Pretty pretty sharp commentary, it must be said.
Very good.
You never miss an opportunity to play your own commentary. I'll give you Mark credit Roy for jumping that. All over games, Howard.
It was a great finish. Just finally, a little bit of news out of India, Nez.
Yeah, big news out of India is that MS Dhoni has given up the captaincy. He stepped down as India's limited overs captain in the one day, as it's expected that Virat Kohli will take over. And this comes just a couple of weeks before those one days up against England. So a big change on the eve of a series.
So that's the end of the third day. Thank you, boys. Thanks. We're quickly out. We're on air from 9:55 tomorrow. We look forward to your company then. Pakistan are 8 for 271 with Yunus Khan on 136. Yasir Shah on 5. And Nathan Lyon, the star, with 3 for 98.
Triple M rocks Test cricket.